Hey, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know. Like, I had like a moment of panic. Like, I was like, hi, you, I'm like, Keegan. What comes next?
You literally wouldn't look at me.
No, because it would have just flopped right out of my brain. Like, Jesus.
The look on your face makes so much, I'm sorry, I'm probably spiking the audio right now, I apologize, but like the look on your face makes so much more sense now because you were just staring at the table.
Yeah.
Your eyes like wide. I'm like, is she like gonna pass out?
Yeah, I had like my heart skipped a beat for like a second there. I was just like, oh no.
It's muscle memory. It's muscle memory. Like, it was kind of like after the pandemic where we didn't have to do the spiel for a really long time. And like the first time I said it, I was like, oh my God, I like remember it. It's like still in my body.
But literally the part that I was like, oh no, was like, and you're listening to. Like, you're angry. I was like, what comes after our names? Like, it gave me like a pause for a second there.
Oh, I God. Really, yeah. I would have loved if there was a pause just to experience
it's
that
been
moment.
Look, we're all just barely hanging on.
It's okay? Been a couple years, Keegan. It's been a 2020, a 2021. We're in 2022. Life is not getting any easier.
Yeah,
all
frankly,
is forgiven.
Very skeptical about 2022 so far.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I'd like a refund on the past 2 years first.
Yes. Yeah. I'm a bit skeptical. Like, from a personal place, like, I'm feeling pretty good. Like, I'm working out. I'm drinking a lot of water.
Right.
I'm not drinking any alcohol so far this year. So I'm feeling I'm reading, like, I'm feeling pretty good personally. However, I still, the world.
But you know, it's bizarre to me because I am it's almost my half birthday, which was a mm-hmm. thing for me growing up because I have a summer birthday. So for school, we would celebrate my birthday on January 9th. So yeah. I'm always like, oh, it's almost my half birthday. So I'm heading into kind of like a milestone birthday, 30.
Yeah.
And I think about, I was 27 when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
And turn 28 and then turn 29 during the pandemic.
Listen,
and I'm going to be turning 30 in 6 months.
It's a mess. at least your birthday's in the summer, which I feel like things always get a little bit better. Like, we get past the winter spike of COVID.
I gotta be honest. I've gotten lucky for both summers where at least it's been like a little bit
like
more chill. But
yeah,
you've got it bad.
I've let it go at this point. Like, I'm like,
we're going to be heading into your third birthday? In the pandemic?
No. 30th, then my 31st.
2020, 2021, yes. So 2022.
This will be my 32nd birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because Max turned 30 literally right before the pandemic started.
Yeah.
And you're like almost the same age. Wow.
Yeah, I'm like four months behind him, I think.
Wow.
So yeah, it's... Yeah.
Totally not on topic for anything we're discussing, but...
No, but
my
did you see
point?
Me just zone out right then? Like, I was just like the past
Boom.
2.5 years, like just what?
But it's like one of those things where it's like, I honestly feel like I have interactions on a daily basis with other people where I'm like, you're forgiven. You're forgiven. You said something wrong. You said something funny. You tripped over your own feet. You're forgiven. None of us know how to be people anymore.
Yeah, we're all barely peopling at this point. We're barely hanging on.
I'm trying to people. But I feel like I'm turning into more of just like a blob.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an enigma.
Anyway.
Anyway.
This has anything to do with what we're talking about today.
Yeah. So this was actually a listener's suggestion us to talk about child beauty pageants in general. It's something that I've definitely thought about a lot during the 4 years we've done this show. And I feel like the best way to start this conversation, because we are going to split this up into kind of two parts. We're going to start with the child pageant section and then move on to just more the adult Miss America pageants from there. But I think the best way to start would be for both of us to kind of state our opinions on it generally so that it kind of lays the groundwork moving forward. So,
well, my opinion has...
What's your opinion and experience? Because I feel like we probably had different experiences with this growing up.
I bet we did. I feel like my opinion on beauty pageants have definitely changed. I was such a, you know, for lack of a better term, girly girl growing up. You know, pink bedroom, princess, everything, loved sparkles, glitter, anything like that was my bag. So for me, I always watched Miss America. I always wanted, I wanted to be that like glamorous older woman.
Were beauty pageants something that like your friends in school did? Was it something that, because like Missouri to me is kind of that like weird state where you're like half in the Midwest, half in the South.
Yeah, not so much in Missouri. Whenever I was a kid, like a toddler, right. I did a couple like little beauty pageants.
Really?
But it wasn't like toddlers and tiaras. It was like back in the day, back when it was.
Oh, like, no. Like it was kind of probably like the Friends episode where they put Emma in the beauty pageant. Exactly. Yeah. Like, whereas just, like it's not like a huge
you
like.
You put your baby in a cute little frilly dress.
Yeah.
It's still weird.
It's still super fucking
judging
weird.
Babies based on how cute you think they are is still weird.
Yeah.
But I am glad my mom didn't continue on with that. I definitely would have liked to have been in the pageant circuit as a kid because I thought it was glamorous.
I think both of us would have been absolute stars.
Oh, yes.
In child pageants.
Hammed it up.
I was such a ham. Yeah. My mom always had a home video camera on my face and I was making up songs and monologues. Me too. I can just see. Oh, my. I wish we had known each other as children. I know. We would have been best friends.
Such a good
I
time.
Swear. Oh, my gosh. But yeah, like I would have thrived on that. And I did. I did this thing called Stars at Sea, and that's how I got my scholarship to the school that we went to. Uh-huh. And it was probably a bit of a scam, but I had a great time. But I had to do like a modeling section and like monologues, improv and stuff. But there was like a whole like modeling like thing or whatever.
I got mine through a Christian acting and music thing, and it was the same thing.
I had no idea. Yeah, Were you on a cruise ship?
I was not.
I was on a cruise ship.
I was in Florida. I have my prize over there.
Did you get a trophy?
Yeah.
What'd you win?
It was like I placed in like commercial modeling. Yeah.
I won best overall actress in my age category. Thank you very much.
But it is where I got my scholarship to go to the school that we went to as
well. Yeah. I love it. That's so funny. So like that was my only experience, but like, so my dad was in advertising and like kind of wanted me to get into modeling when I was like in my teens. And I was just like, I can't take this seriously. Like I've never been, I love taking photos and stuff, but like, I don't take myself seriously enough to do that. It's like, it wasn't my jive. So I just totally made a joke of it or whatever. But like, pageants in general are just like not a thing where I'm from, or at least it wasn't anywhere near my existence. Like I never knew a single person who did a pageant growing up. My first introduction to that world was like Toddlers and Tiaras.
Yeah. I mean, I will say when I lived in Las Vegas, there were more pageants.
Right.
There were more pageants in Las Vegas than there were where I was at.
It just wasn't like in the culture. Right. And like, that's why I was asking about Missouri. Cause I feel like,
no, it wasn't really in the culture where I was from in Missouri. I don't know about like some of the other cities or like other areas, but not really like where I was from. Like, I'm sure that there were pageants, but not like the big, big, big ones.
But I do want to say before we start as well that there was something interesting because you all know how much of a psychology nerd I am. And I love looking at my Psychology Today Psychology Today articles for episodes. So I was reading a lot about the psychological effects of pageants and child beauty pageants and stuff. And they were really going into how similar it is to any sort of aesthetic sport or activity that we're into, which I think can help us relate to it a lot because we've both been involved in that. And I think there's a way of being like, oh my God, beauty pageants are so extreme. But when you think about it, there are a lot of correlations between, you know, dancers, skaters, cheerleaders, actors. There is this really high pressure system, this high pressure job put on a child.
Very young children.
And it's a lot of pressure when it comes to appearance and poise and speech and things that kids normally, I would say, shouldn't have to worry about. I personally am anti-pageant, anti-child pageant.
I would not put my child in a pageant, even as much as I, as a little kid, would have said I wanted to be in it.
Yeah.
I now, as an adult, would not.
Because as a kid, there's no way that you can understand what's put behind it. I would not. And it's not even just about me, like, oh, I wouldn't put a kid in it. Like, I'm going to be anti-pageants unless they completely change. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that the thought of putting so much basis on looks is so damaging. And even though I know there are interview portions and talent and all this other stuff, all of that is still surrounding around
right.
a very
first and foremost is what do you look like?
Yeah, and it's yeah. this Eurocentric, one-dimensional, even though they tried to be more diverse, it's still so one-dimensional and it hurts me
right.
to and, watch these things.
With child pageants specifically, it is such a, I mean, all pageants, right? Like what beauty is very kind of like narrowly defined.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And so for child pageants, you're reinforcing this notion that like beauty looks like this.
Uh-huh.
And what it looks like is you are five and you're wearing fake eyelashes and fake teeth. And
yep.
in some cases that I'll talk about going into this section, you're getting Botox
yep.
as a elementary school child.
Yeah.
You know? It's a very narrowly defined definition of what beauty is. And you're introducing that to children very, very young.
100%.
Which is a very hard thing to shake free of later.
Because when you're being taught these beauty ideals at a very young age, you're literally forming their minds to believe these things. Like children are literally sponges and
we got that
forming
enough.
Their brains.
Right. And I feel like I got that enough just by watching yes. Disney movies and just every other piece of media.
But actually having your child mm-hmm. be put in that amount of pressure to actually be that is something astronomical.
Right. And often because of this, like there is this success by proxy that they talk about in a lot of these
stage mom.
Princess by proxy stage mom things that happen a lot with
yeah.
children in beauty pageants that they talk about in a lot of those psychology articles as yep. well, which creates very often a very unhealthy dynamic between parent and child, which is also not good, especially since
yeah.
a lot of these kids are literally like 4 to 7. Like
yeah.
they're very, very, very young.
They're very young. So let's go back to the beginning a little bit. So adult pageants were around before child beauty pageants, but we're talking about child beauty pageants first. So the idea of a child beauty pageant had been circling around for quite a while in the beginning of the 20th century through these Most Beautiful Child contests, which were held in major cities across the U.S.
Which again, weird. It's weird.
It's like, very weird.
Even if you don't put makeup on your baby, like just being like, my baby's cute, right? Like that, like validation. And I understand that a lot of times there's incentives in the
I
form
was going
like,
to say,
prize,
I think
prizes.
A lot of times there's financial prizes and then these parents are like, my child is beautiful because everyone thinks their child is beautiful, of course. So
right.
it's like they're going to put them for these things. And I get that like means to an ends kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it just ends up feeling really predatory on like lower
it
classes.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's awful. So then a hotel in Atlantic City got the idea to hold a pageant to help boost tourism. And that was when both adult and child pageants kind of became a thing. The first Little Miss America pageant began in the 60s in New Jersey at the Palisades Amusement Park. Originally, it was only for children 13 to 17 years old. But by 1964, there were over 35,000 participants, which prompted age divisions. So then they were like, we can't just have these teenagers doing it. We have to let it open for everybody.
You really could have just left. I mean, even then at 13, I think it's damaging to be in direct competition with your peers like that on like a looks basis.
Yeah.
However, I do feel like, you know,
you have a bit more
autonomy
at that
right.
point where you can
you
make your own decisions.
Agency.
Yeah, exactly. Since the 60s, the industry has grown to include about 25,000 pageants, and the industry brings in about $20 billion a year.
Yeah, it's very concerning. And anybody who watched, like you were saying that your first introduction to pageants was through like
Toddlers and
tiaras.
Yeah.
And if you watch that show, and I understand that the show is kind of, I don't think the show wants you to be rooting for these parents necessarily. Like
no.
It's showing you this as kind of this like sideshow, look at these people. Like,
yeah.
Isn't this insane? However, I do think it was a lot of people's kind of like first exposure to children in these positions. And you saw really like damaging relationships
yeah.
between the parents and the children.
But I gotta say, as a kid, that was the reason that I really enjoyed. I never really got into Toddlers and Tiaras. When I watched that and I watched Dance Moms, it was the like embellished version of my childhood
sure
that I enjoyed watching.
Yeah, pumped up to 11.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. like I mean I saw like some actual physical abuse go down at skating rinks, but like seeing moms like doing the dance routines, yes, and doing all that, yeah, like to me I was like, oh my god, I know that person, yes, like it was, to me it was so funny, but almost as an adult watching it I'm like, oh, it's
one of those shows that I don't think would exist now.
No,
like, I think that people wouldn't allow this to exist now because what you
poor
were seeing,
Honey Boo Boo,
right, and what you were seeing was young, very young children, like literal toddlers, and they're having meltdowns and they're having these very normal reactions to being forced to work these very intense, rigorous schedules.
Well, yes, because that's the thing. It's not just the actual pageant where they're going out and performing. There are so many hours of training and costumes. And one big takeaway, actually, I should say two big takeaways that I remember from Toddlers and Tiaras. Both kind of have to do with Honey Boo Boo,
yeah,
but it's the spray tanning.
Yeah.
And it was like the Honey Boo Boo juice.
The
go-go
juice.
The go-go juice.
Which was a combination of Red Bull and Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Mama June, her mom, was feeding her child at like 5.
Yeah.
Like to keep her going, to keep, yeah, her energetic.
And you know what that reminds me of is Judy Garland going to MGM at 12 and having them put her on pep pills and all that kind of stuff. Like it really, like I get that it's like one of them is a drug and one of them is like something you can buy at 7-Eleven. But it's fucked up.
Like Red Bull's not good for, I like Red Bull, and Red Bull's not good for adults. You should not be giving that to somebody who's not at all developed.
I wasn't allowed to drink soda until I was probably like 7 or 8. Like my mom didn't want me to have any of that caffeine stuff because it was just like, it's not good for you. And you're young.
And you're giving it to them for the express purpose of knowing that they do not have enough energy or stamina to get through this. So you are manipulating their body, like their body chemistry, so that they can.
And like, I'm sorry if I'm kind of like jumping around in note situations here, but like talking about this made me think of it. There are no child labor laws when it comes to activities like this.
Right, which there should be because it's a full-time job.
There should be. And I even think about the time that I was homeschooled or the time that my friends were homeschooled for skating and the amount of hours we put in. But then I think about these beauty pageants and it's such, to me, it's like, I don't know if I'm thinking it's weird because sports and this are so much different in my head, but I'm thinking about the amount of time that these kids are putting into just their appearance,
yeah,
that makes me so pissed. There's no other like real goals in line that drives me nuts.
Right. So like, let's jump ahead a little bit then in my notes and talk about that pageant mom, Carrie Campbell. In 2011, she admitted to injecting her 8-year-old daughter, Brittany, with Botox. According to ABC News, Campbell claimed that Brittany herself had asked for the injections in a television interview.
What a Ted Cruz move.
Yeah. So in a television interview with Good Morning America, she said that Brittany stated, "I just like don't think wrinkles are nice on little girls." Well, where do you think Brittany got that idea?
Exactly.
Where do you think she got the idea that one, she had wrinkles because she's 8.
Yeah.
So she definitely
doesn't have wrinkles.
And secondly, like, where do you think she got the idea that wrinkles are something that you should be like scared
afraid
of or ashamed
from
of?
From mommy.
Right.
From mommy.
And from the world that they live in.
Yeah.
So the mother then said the other pageant moms, were just telling me about the lines on her face, her 8-year-old's face, and how, you know, a lot of the moms are giving their kids Botox and it's pretty much like a thing. She went on, "I'm not the only one that does it. A lot of moms do it."
Oh my God. And I'm telling you right now, maybe this little Brittany was cool with it because her mom has ingrained in her that these lines are so bad that she needs a needle in her face. But I'm picturing all those little kids that don't want a fucking needle in their face and their parent or whoever
Certainly.
Is coming forward
yeah.
with something like that. That is terrifying
well,
to me because kids hate shots.
As an adult, you can make, like, I am so pro making whatever decision you want to make
right,
for yourself
of course.
As an adult. Like, I will, you know, there's probably stuff I'm going to do, you know, at some point in my life. But as a child, if I was an 8-year-old and I told my mom, I want Botox, like, I want it. I want lip injections.
Your mom would think you were fucking crazy.
Well, and it's her job to tell me no. Like,
yeah.
It is your job as my mother to say no. And what doctor performed that procedure? Like, who would give a child...
It's such... Well, and I'm like, my brain is jumping around to a million different parts of my notes because to me that speaks of privilege. like extreme privilege, because what doctor would?
Yeah, you got to be paying them a lot because Botox is not that expensive.
Exactly.
So you got to be paying them over for them to be able to do that, because I really do feel like there have to be rules against that. Like, yeah, you could potentially lose your license. You have to be, you know, I just think that that's wild. And that kind of
it's got
to
be worth the risk.
Yeah. And that kind of leads into the next bullet point I have here, which is the big, big one that I think a lot of people talk about when they talk about child beauty pageants. And that is the sexualization of children.
Yes. So I actually also have a lot of notes on this as well, obviously, because like you said, this is like the biggest talking point. But I read something interesting because I feel like something that society does so much is blur the lines between sexuality mm-hmm. and sexualization. And yes. I think that not for necessarily our listeners, but for a lot of people, that's something that can be very blurred. But I read this online and I felt like this was a very good explanation for the difference between sexuality and sexualization. And that is, participants and viewers impose adulthood on children while still expecting them to radiate innocence.
Yes.
And I think that is like the best explanation of these child beauty pageants, because for one, we're judging them on the fact that they're so innocent and cute, yeah, and adorable. Isn't that cute? But then at the same time, we are dressing them and treating them in a way that is very, very adult. And we're judging them in a way that is very, very adult. Mm-hmm. The judging systems between the adult beauty pageants and the child beauty pageants really aren't different. It's the same expectations.
Yeah.
And that right there should tell you that these children are expected to act as grown adults. And one of the things that adults do is they tend to show off their bodies a little bit yeah. more. And they maybe will get a spray tan or plastic surgery and things like that. And there is this innate difference between a healthy sexuality in seeing a girl, or a, I shouldn't say a girl, seeing a woman in scantily clad clothes versus sexualization and seeing a young girl in scantily clad clothes. Now, this is not the child's fault. I want to say that first and foremost, because I think that there is also this thing where it's like, oh, well, she's out there in this. Like, for me, I would get like wolf whistled at when I was little for my like skating skirts that I would wear and things like that. But it made me feel like I was doing something wrong. And I think it's just important to say, like, these kids doing this, there's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong is the adult viewing it in a distorted, horrible way.
And I think it's also important to look at, like, how did we get here? Like, why on Toddlers and Tiaras, when a 4-year-old dressed up like Dolly Parton, who puts on like big boobs, padded boobs and padded butt, like, why is that something that we have decided as a culture within the pageant culture that that is something that should be praised, right? Like, why, like, where did we get, how did we get to this?
How did place, we?
Right? I don't know, except for that these children being sexualized gets them higher points.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they wouldn't do it otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep mentioning Dance Moms because I didn't really watch a lot of Toddlers and Tiaras, but there's an episode where they're wearing these like teeny little like bikini outfits and the moms are like totally scandalized. And the dance teacher was like, we were just in Arizona and all the girls are wearing these things. Like, if we want to win, we got to be competitive. We got to keep up with the winners. And this is what the winners are wearing.
But
so I wonder,
why are the winners wearing that? Like, I think that's always the question that we need to ask, right?
Well,
it's not that it's necessarily inherently sexual, but it's, why are we doing it? And is that reason sexual, right? Is there a sexuality behind why we are putting little kids in these outfits that we would deem in any other context to be age inappropriate for them, right?
Right, exactly. And something that I think is absolutely crazy is that the Miss Teen USA just recently in 2016 replaced their swimwear category with athletic wear. In 2016. But at the same time, that cruise that I went on for the talent competition, I had a swimsuit thing, but I was like 17 at the time. Yeah. So it didn't seem weird.
I didn't have one in the one that I did, but it was
because you were at a Christian
camp.
It
was a Christian camp. However, to talk a little bit more about Miss Teen USA, I can tell you probably why, and it's probably because Donald Trump owned it. Donald Trump owned Miss Teen USA.
Good point.
Because he owned Miss Universe, and so he also owned Miss USA and Miss Teen USA underneath it. And
does he still own it?
Not anymore. But he did speak quite openly about the fact that he would walk into women's dressing rooms, or not even women's, he would walk into the dressing
rooms. Girls' dressing rooms.
Of the girls of Miss Teen USA. They reported that. They reported feeling uncomfortable and sexually harassed, which is another thing. And again, you know, looking at it from the perspective of like, we've been in art and modeling and sports and like all these other things
where
as well.
You get undressed when you're backstage and you need to feel comfortable.
Sure. And you can be, I mean, we've talked about it within gymnastics and figure skating. You can be in situations that can be dangerous without your parent around, but that right. is something else to keep in mind when you put your kid into pageants, especially as they get older, that they can end up in these compromising positions, especially since all the big pageants, including Miss USA and including Miss America, are owned by men.
Yeah. And that's another really big reason I think that is kind of overlying this entire episode, is that pageants were created specifically for the male gaze.
Yes.
They were created by men for the male gaze. And especially involving children in that is really disgusting. But I also think it's kind of because there's this offshoot of adult pageants where they just kind of were like, we're going to do the same thing, but for
right,
kids.
We're going to make no changes.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the exact same thing.
Yeah. But then there's also like something that you mentioned made me think of the fact that when you're put into high levels of competition, whether it be sport or pageants or anything like that, or if you're a child actor, a performer, mm-hmm. you are expected to be an adult and you're expected to interact with adults like an adult, even though
yes.
you're a kid.
Yeah.
So there is this also this expectation of being okay with whatever the adults do around you and fitting in with those adults around you, so that maybe if there are uncomfortable situations, you're not going to bring it up because that's not the adult thing to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and also like if pageants is your dream, right? I
guess you're not going to want to screw it up.
You wouldn't screw it up. Like you're not going to tell Donald Trump that he can't do that or he can't come in there. Like you're going to allow it
yeah.
even if you're uncomfortable because that is the guy who could make or break you.
Yeah.
And often did. I mean, there was a lot of talk, a lot of people spoke about Donald Trump during his run for presidency, about his time as the owner of the Miss Universe and Miss USA pageants, that he had it in his contract that he could override any decision that
yeah.
the judges made.
I remember that.
Choose who won the pageant, and often would, if he thought there were too many women in color who were finalists, that he didn't like their features, he thought their features were too ethnic, he would
right.
just kick people out. So it was to your benefit if you really wanted to win this pageant or like advance in the pageant.
Right. It's almost like a sacrifice you would make. Right.
And a lot of these people, like, they put a lot of their time, especially people who started in pageants as children, they've put a lot of their time, effort, money, hopes, dreams into achieving the highest level possible.
Right.
So it's a very shitty situation to be in.
It's a dangerous position to put a kid in.
Yeah.
There has been some legislation, but pretty much in France is the only
yes.
place I've ever seen this.
Mm-hmm.
So in France, legislators banned child beauty pageants for children under the age of 16 in an attempt to protect children from being sexualized, which I'm all for. I mean, I don't think there's any way to prevent sexualization of children.
No.
But I think this is a very great first step. And I was reading that it was kind of from watching shows like Toddlers and Tiaras
yes.
and kind of witnessing Miss America and all that, that kind of made them be like, this is some weird Western bullshit. We don't want to be a part of it.
Yes.
We're not doing it.
Yeah. There was a Harvard sociologist, Dr. Hillary Friedman, who gave an interview in 2012 on the matter of like whether or not pageants and shows like Toddlers and Tiaras were kind of perpetuating this idea of sexualizing children. And
yeah.
she said that she did believe that it was normalizing the idea of the sexualization of children. And I think
totally.
That's very true. I mean, if you get used to seeing little girls behaving
dressed up
like grown women, you know, it does kind of like cement in our brains. And like you said, I don't think that legislation is going to stop the sexualization of children. However, we can make it more difficult. Like
yeah.
the barrier to...
We don't have to make it easy for these people.
Yeah, yeah. The barrier to seeing that kind of thing, because I can't imagine that it probably is a magnet for pedophiles or people seeking that, you know?
Pageants are literally magnets for sexual pedophiles, just like coaching can be, just like teaching can be.
Yeah.
Whenever there are positions where you are working with large numbers of children, you are at risk for pedophiles being so attracted to that job position that it's not even funny. That is why background checks and everything are so important.
But not even just a job. A lot of these pageants are pretty much open to the public.
Right.
So, I mean, anybody off the street could walk in and your child is, I don't care what they're wearing, even if they're covered head to toe, your child is parading around on
stage.
Like
an adult.
Right? Like, and I don't know, I would feel very uncomfortable with that. And I understand that we can't like completely mold our society around a select few.
But there can
assholes.
Be protections as to who comes to watch these events and things like that, that I think are incredibly important. And I think that before we move on to adult beauty pageants, we can't talk about child pageants without talking about JonBenet Ramsey. It's going to come up in anywhere you look up child pageants, yeah. Because it was kind of one of the first times that like the American conscious became aware of the way we reacted to these child pageant girls, because the photo of JonBenet that was mm-hmm. so widely used,
that you will still find if you look up JonBenet,
the
like,
first picture yeah. is her like glamour shot. She's got her bleached blonde hair that
and
her mother bleached.
She's five.
She was killed when she was six. She was 5 years old in these photos. She's got fake lashes, bleached hair,
red lipstick.
She's in a big feathery, you know, outfit. And every magazine, every article used these like modeling photos. And
it's
truly
very strange.
It's very strange. I think it's a huge reason why that case was so popular yes. in the media. But it also really shone a light on these pageant moms and really did nothing good for Patsy Ramsey at all, because it made her look really, really bad, because she legit was like bleaching her 4-year-old daughter's hair to make her look good. Fun fact, I did background with a woman who did pageants with JonBenet growing up.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's
her sister was JonBenet's age, and she was like a year or two younger, and they would like go out for breakfast before the competitions and such.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little younger than JonBenet would have been.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think I am anyway, but I was a child at the time whenever all that stuff was happening. And I remember seeing her face all over those tabloids.
That People magazine, for some reason, will always, because it was just that headshot really
yeah.
big.
Yeah. And I remember not thinking anything of it at the time necessarily, except for thinking that she was pretty. But now as an adult, I do find that very strange that that angle was played up so much. That's just like this glamorous pageant baby.
Yeah. I just Googled JonBenet because I wanted to see how old she would have been. She was born in 1990. So you would be slightly older than her, about the same age. Yeah. August 6th.
I'm 1990 as well. So, yeah.
So she would have been
a few months younger.
A few months younger, yeah. Sorry, yeah. So when I Googled her just now, all of the photos that I'm seeing right now and I'm scrolling through and that People magazine cover showed up, I don't see a single photo of her looking like a kid.
Yeah, you are hard-pressed to find a photo of JonBenet looking like a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And I think that people forgot that she was 5 years old. And I also think that, you know, because
whole case was so scandalized.
It was, and I was going to say that, I think, unfortunately, because our society is the way that it is, I think sexualizing her as a child did bring this new level of scandal, especially with the people who came forward, and there was, you know, trigger warning, all this stuff about her underwear and like,
yeah,
this is a
whether or not she was sexually abused and whether or not her parents were allowing her to be around pedophiles and whether or not beauty pageants had anything to do with that. And while I think that that's a very kind of like separate issue from the case, maybe not, depending on who actually murdered JonBenet Ramsey, I think it was actually a good thing that conversation started. Whether or not I think it was good overtook the fact that this was a murder investigation of a child.
Yes, I agree with both of those things.
Right,
yes.
Both can be true at the same time, right?
I'm glad we're opening the conversation about beauty pageants, but I don't like the way it was sensationalized in the media as this scandalous, like, almost like a noir kind of vibe, or almost for a child. Like
if her parents are innocent, which I'm yes. kind of on the team that her brother did it and the dad covered it up. That's kind of my
I know. I try thing. Not to say that publicly because people have very strong opinions. But
I mean,
yes,
I don't care. Yeah. Come at me. Like, that's how I feel. But anyway, hashtag so it's Burke. Like if the parents, let's say they had nothing to do with it, right? I think that taking the beauty pageant angle then is a horrible thing. Because I think that it's turning the investigation and the public awareness away from something that could have actually happened. But if the parents did have something to do with it, then I think that the beauty pageant angle has a lot of weight.
It has weight. I just don't like the way it was reported on.
Totally.
Because I feel like they clung to something that they thought was like, this is unique and interesting. And look at this pretty baby.
And they only ever shared that about her. And that's the thing. I mean, it's also kind of that like missing white girl syndrome. It was this beautiful
blonde,
cherubic looking little girl, you know, like of course everybody's like, oh my god, we must know what happened to her.
She truly was like the like 80s 90s like baby, like perfect angel.
She passed in 96. She really was. She was like what would be seen as kind of America's sweetheart, and she did great in pageants, you know what I mean, because she was beautiful, and she was beautiful before any of that stuff was done to her. Yeah. But anyways.
Okay, so let's kind of move into the feminist critique of pageants. So I read this very interesting Medium.com article. And you know Medium.com like articles are kind of hit and miss because almost anyone can get on there and write. However, this was pretty well written. And it was written by Vaishnavi Palapathu.
Oh, I read this one.
Did you read this one?
Yes.
Oh, it was so good. And so this is kind of long, but I'm going to read this whole section because I do think that she kind of broke down the issues of beauty pageants in a very like concise way. Adults, like adult beauty pageants.
Yeah.
Beauty pageants have long been critiqued by feminists for reinforcing patriarchal standards for women, such as by objectifying them. Women are told to line up and are then scored based on their looks, their smiles, their hair, makeup, and clothing. Women are sexualized as a form of entertainment, and these pageants promote standards of beauty that are unrealistic. In fact, the identity of a woman is reduced to a number. They lose their name and personality. This effectively erases her value outside of the world of appearance and aesthetics. The criteria by which women are chosen or even eligible to compete is very problematic. She must be between the age of 18 and 25, a certain height and weight, and her body measurements must not exceed a certain number of inches. Pageants also often reinforce ideas about how long the hair on our head and body should be, the lightness of our skin, makeup we're supposed to apply, and the clothes we're supposed to wear. These restrictions promote a narrow and limiting conception of beauty. Women and girls who do not fit into this ideal box are singled out and excluded from the narrative. Young girls and women are hence socialized subconsciously to evaluate their self-worth based on their physical appearance. I love, it's a lot, but
no,
I
but
love
all great.
The way that she says that, because I do think that it is important to point out, it's not, I don't like that it's ever framed as we are against these women or we're against these women because of their appearance or because they're participating in this thing.
And to be very clear, we're not against the women.
No.
Never against the women or the people that choose to be a part of this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like it's not about that. It's more to me about the messages that it's sending to the women who do not fit into this ideal box.
Right.
And that they should fit into this box. This is what the ideal woman is.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know, the one thing that I couldn't stop thinking about when you were reading that, you were talking about the age range, you were talking about the size, mm-hmm. the skin color, the hair color, everything. And all I could think about was what happens to those women when they're done with pageants.
Right. Oh, yeah.
What happens to the way they view their bodies and themselves when they're not actively competing and trying to keep their bodies at a certain level? And that is the biggest critique that I see online of pageants in general. It is the astronomical numbers of women and girls and anybody. I mean, because there are lots of boys and men who compete as well, mm-hmm. that have incredible body dysmorphia, eating disorders, depression, anxiety, perfectionism, OCD. There are so many mental disorders that can come out of this. And there are so many people that when you're actually in that world and you're distracted because you're so busy with everything else, and that it's like once you retire and that identity is gone. And like, I so relate to this. And it was such a big reason why my eating disorder just festered. Because once you feel like you've lost that part of your identity, and when that identity is partially tied, or maybe in this case, fully tied to your looks,
yeah.
One, who are you without it? And what's your worth without it?
Absolutely. I mean, just as a woman existing in the world, right? And maybe it's pumped up slightly for you and I because we were in acting circles, auditioning and things like that.
Well, and you did cheerleading and I did figure skating. A lot of our lives have based around our appearances, which is why we can relate.
Absolutely. But beyond that, even just women existing in the world, we are constantly being told that every day we age, we're depreciating in value, right? And especially like every day we age after the age of 25, we're depreciating in value, and you're constantly supposed to be fighting against getting older because your value is intrinsically tied.
And we're supposed to really hate the younger ones because they still have that youth and beauty.
Right, yeah. And like your value is so intrinsically tied to how you look.
Yeah.
Right, and the size of your body and those
kinds
of things.
And the color of your skin and the texture of your hair
and the texture of your skin. Yeah,
like, there's so much involved in that there's no, in my mind, there's no way that you can leave that world unscathed.
Right. And so, I mean, even just existing as a woman, it's hard already. I mean, existing as a person, right? Like, these pressures are on us. Aging is hard. But whenever you are in a world where that is your value, like, right, you are literally being measured and judged based on, you have to go in front of a crowd and announce your measurements to the crowd, right?
Yeah.
Like, those kinds of things. You're being publicly weighed. You're being told to lose weight. Like, we both knew a person who went to our school who was Miss Mexico. And,
oh, yeah.
And she was in my class and I was friends with her and lovely.
Yeah,
totally
she
lovely.
Was very sweet.
But she told me after she, in order to win Miss Mexico, first of all, they paid for her. She was 22 when I met her. She turned 23 a few months after we met. So she was younger than that whenever she competed.
She's probably like 20, 21.
And they paid to have the fat taken out of her cheeks. They paid to have her boobs done. It was botched the first time, so she had to get a second one.
I remember talking to her about that.
They paid to have liposuction on her body, right? And at the end of the day, she didn't even end up liking the, like...
No, and you become someone who is not yourself.
And she didn't want to do it. Like, no. You know, it's kind of this thing that, again, it was like, well, you have to do these things so that you photograph better. And I think the second boob job she got was after she was Miss Mexico so that she would be in the right shape for her, like, tour that she had to do afterwards.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
It's just... It's very intense. And so to speak about eating disorders and beauty pageants, I was only able to find like one research study about beauty pageants and eating disorders. And it's kind of old. It's from 2003, but I thought I'd share anyway. It found that self-esteem, dieting, and body image of 131 female beauty pageant contestants with a median age of 26 from 43 states were examined by an anonymous survey. Most, 89.6%, reported being a pageant finalist or winner, and 55.2% had competed at a national or international level. Over one-fourth, 26% of the women had been told or perceived they had an eating disorder, which reportedly began at 16.25 years of age. Yeah. Almost half, 48.5%, reported wanting to be thinner, and 57% were trying to lose weight. It's this constant, you know, and this is after they're out of the pageant world. Yeah. It's just like, that was something that...
Well, because this is the thing. My eating disorder did not present itself until after I quit skating. Because when I was skating, I'm a naturally thinner person, but I didn't really go through puberty until after I quit. So I gained weight, my body was changing, all these other things. And so it wasn't until after that I started to see my body differently and want to get back to that kind of prepubescent stage and all that kind of stuff. So I do feel like when you're in it, there's one level of like, I got to diet, I got to do this, but there's also like a goal in mind. And I feel like once that goal is gone, you still have that expectation on yourself to perform and look the same way you did when you were at your best. Right. I know for me, there was a big thing where I used to always say I peaked when I was 14. Like I was like the best at my sport. And to me, that meant my life peaked at that point. And so what my body was, all of those things, right, in my mind, I had convinced myself subconsciously even that that was the time that I was at my very, very best. So even in my adult form, I wanted to strive for that. And right, which is why when I think of these people, because it's like, of course, it's so damaging when you're in it. But all of those effects are going to hit you so much more once you're out of it.
Right. I mean,
and how do you move on?
If that's how you grew up, right? Like that's just kind of the way your brain is wired as well. So just because you're not doing pageants anymore, there's not an automatic switch in your brain that says, oh, you can stop thinking about your body like this.
But
now
you're not training all day and you're not doing all these things. So your body's going to change and all these other things are suddenly going to change. And then you're like, wait, no, what the fuck? I'm only worth something if I look that way.
Right. And so there was another study that was done in 2005 that was conducted by Anna Wunderlich of the University of Minnesota, and a couple of fellow researchers, in which they used data collected from 22 women, 11 of whom had participated in a beauty pageant during their childhood and 11 who didn't. And they found that the ones who had partaken in childhood beauty pageants expressed greater body dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
So while there were kind of similar numbers as far as like full-blown eating disorders, the way they talked about their bodies, the way that they expressed, you know, dissatisfaction with their bodies,
yeah,
were greater by a lot, you know,
because you're told from the moment you begin that that's your value. And that's just,
yeah. And you're always picking, you're always pinching, you're always trying to find things that are wrong so that you can fix them so that you can look perfect on stage. Yep. You know,
It makes me so mad.
It makes me mad too. So, okay. There is one more thing at least that I want to touch on.
Okay. Cause there's something I want to touch on, but maybe it's the same thing.
Probably the same thing.
Oh my God. Is it?
I feel like we would be remiss to not discuss the 1968 protests.
I want to talk about the 1968 protests, but there is one other topic that I want to discuss as well, but we can touch on that first.
Okay, great.
Do you remember our girl that was like one of the big organizers for this?
I'm absolutely certain we have spoken about her. Is it Carol Hanisch?
We've talked about Carol Hanisch. Do you remember who Carol Hanisch's friend was? Shulamith fucking Firestone,
oh,
baby.
Okay. Oh, right.
Yeah, she was. So it was the where am I? Hold on, let me find my notes here. So it was the New York Radical Women that put, yes, on this, mm-hmm, protest. And the New York Radical Women was started by former child actor Robin Morgan, along with Carol Hanisch, who was one of the best friends of Shulamith Firestone, along with another woman named Pam Allen. They're all awesome. Shulamith Firestone, I love you forever. Let's continue.
Yeah. And Carol Hanisch, you might remember, also popularized the phrase, the personal is political.
Yes.
So that's the person who popularized that phrase. And these women organized the first protest against Miss America. So they were responding not only to the pageant and its antiquated misogynistic attitudes toward women, but also how the United States as a whole treated women. So they saw, yeah, this. Carol Hanisch went on to say that this just might be the way to bring the fledgling women's liberation movement into the public arena.
It, right, because they, huge, had started the New York Radical Feminists. They were doing this stuff, but there was nothing, there were no like political activist, what's the word I'm looking for? Demonstrations. There were no, right, demonstrations that were going on that would have like the public consciousness be aware of this new feminist, yes, movement. So they were kind of like looking for something. They were looking for an angle of something.
Well, it's smart.
And it is. And Carol Hanisch saw, along with a few other people, and I believe I did discuss this a bit. We did talk about the protest a bit, or I did when I covered Shulamith Firestone. But Carol Hanisch and a few others went to go see like a documentary. And that was when she first learned about the correlation between beauty pageants and women's self-esteem and all the things that we just discussed. And it was kind of like a light bulb moment for her. Like, this is what we should be going after.
Yeah. I mean, so let's talk a little bit about the Miss America pageant, because I know for me, the Miss America pageant was like the pageant. Like, it's the one that was televised. I watched it on TV. You know, I loved it.
I never watched it, but it is like the pageant.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Miss America pageant began as a marketing scheme held in Atlantic City just after Labor Day in 1921 as a way for newspapers to increase their circulation for the resort's businesses to extend their summer season.
Can I mention something really quick? Because I don't think we're going to get into it in the episode. Fun fact, P.T. Barnum actually tried to start the first beauty pageant in the U.S., but there was so many protests and things like that going on around it that he essentially did like a mail-in beauty contest. So you could like send in your photo and your measurements and all this stuff, and then the judges would go off of that. It's so shady and weird. I had to mention that really quick.
Well, okay. So that is kind of how the Miss America pageant started as
well. So
newspapers across the country held contests judging photographs of young women. And then the winners, like just judging by their photos, the winners came to Atlantic City for a competition where they were evaluated on personality and social graces. But it was only white women, mind you.
Yep.
At first, it was an unspoken rule that the contestants of the competition be white. But in 1930, Lenora Slaughter, who was the director of the pageant, put into effect rule number 7, which said, quote, contestants must be of good health and of the white race.
Okay, so you are actually bringing up the other topic that I want to get into.
Oh, yes.
So let's veer for a second and then we'll get back to the protest. So racism in pageants it's huge.
Yes.
So like Keegan said, in early years, only white contestants were allowed to compete, and pageants themselves had a lot of racial undertones.
Yes.
So the first time that black performers appeared in pageants were in 1923, but they were as backup dancers who were portraying enslaved people. So
on the Miss America stage, mind you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In 1970, Sherrow Brown represented Iowa in Miss America, being the first Black American to compete in Miss America.
So that was something like 30 years after the Rule 7 was abolished. So it was abolished in 1940, and it wasn't until 1970 that a Black woman would appear as a contestant on the Atlantic City stage.
Yeah. So it was Janelle Comisayong, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing this wrong. I forgot to look up a Google sound example. In 1977, Janelle Comisayong became the first Black Miss America, and Vanessa Williams became the first Black Miss America in 1983. So I know I'm saying the same thing twice, and I had to kind of reread it in my head, but there is something called Black Miss America that was created as kind of a protest against the regular Miss America, which I'm going to get into in just a second. But I wanted to talk about Vanessa Williams before I do so. So Penthouse Magazine, which is kind of like an X-rated magazine, published some unauthorized photos of Vanessa shortly before the Miss America pageant happened. And once they were released, because those photos were out, she was forced to give up her title. And it wasn't until 32 years later in 2015 that Miss America CEO Sam Haskell apologized to her on stage with Vanessa Williams at the 2016 Miss America pageant. And this was, in my perspective, a very racial thing.
Absolutely, yes.
Because I think that if you're talking about models, there are lots of times that these models would be posing for magazines that are very similar to this. Like, that's just part of the work. And I think that the fact that she was the first Black woman to win Miss America,
They made a lot of it.
Yeah. Such a big deal of it. Mm-hmm. And it was so unbelievably scandalized. But I want to get back to, very briefly, back to Janelle Comisayong, who was the first winner of Black Miss America in 1977. And that was created in 1968 at the Ritz-Carlton in Atlantic City. The NAACP Tri-State Director Philip H. Savage supported the pageant and helped it receive nationwide coverage as a protest against the Miss America pageant. The event was televised on NBC in September 1977, the day before CBS aired Miss America, because the shade.
Yeah, and it was happening at the same time as the 1968 protest against Miss America. So
yes.
I think that there was some collaboration to have those events happen at the same time, kind of.
Well, because the women's liberation movement really did take a lot of notes from the civil rights movement. And I think because the civil rights movement had this amazing ability to have these demonstrations that created such nationwide attention, that it makes sense that they would find a way to work together, or at least be inspired by what the NAACP and Black Miss America was doing in order to kind of like hold their own sort of protest.
Yeah. Yeah. So the talent portion of the competition, now used widely to justify that the competition is not based solely on looks alone,
right,
was introduced in 1938. However, that same year, the pageant chose to limit eligibility to single, never married women between the ages of 18 and 28. The pageant saw its first Jewish winner in 1945 in Bess Meyerson. However, pageant officials asked her to change her name to Beth Merrick to sound less Jewish, but she refused.
That is so common, not just with Jewish names, but with so many names that are
quote-unquote ethnic names.
Ethnic, mm-hmm, or difficult to pronounce, yeah, or things like that.
Bess Meyerson is not difficult to pronounce.
That is not at all. It is so unbelievable. That's right. Clearly racist, but like, I just feel like that's such a common thing where it's like, if you sound too something, you have to change it. You can't, yes, sound to whatever your culture is, right, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and they explicitly told her it was because she sounded too Jewish. And
yeah,
she refused to change her name. So she, as, you know, kind of a result of that, she received few endorsements and her victory tour was cut short in part because she couldn't stay at a lot of the hotels along the tour because,
horrible,
they wouldn't accept Jewish guests. And there has not been a winner of Miss America who is Jewish since then. So that was in 1945.
I mean, hey, if I was part of the Jewish community and I witnessed all that going on, I wouldn't be surprised. They're like, we're not going to be a part, right, of that anymore. I do want to go back. I'm sorry if I'm jumping around, listeners, but I do want to go back to the 1968 protest.
Well, that's exactly what I'm doing right now. So,
oh, okay. Okay, good.
I just wanted to give that history so, yes, that we know what led up to them deciding to do this protest.
Like, it wasn't like a random,
right,
pick.
And yes, it was also because this is a televised event. It was a huge platform. It was a way to publicize the feminist movement and the women's liberation movement.
Right.
But also, I mean, they had legitimate critiques,
yeah,
of the way that the pageant had operated up until this point. Right. So let's get back into the protest of 1968. So on August 22nd of 1968, the New York Radical Women issued a press release inviting women of every political persuasion to the Atlantic City Boardwalk on September 7th, which was the day of the contest. They would, quote, protest the image of Miss America, an image that oppresses women in every area in which it purports to represent us, end quote, which I love. Saying that, it's like they are trying to say that they are empowering women, right?
And
that
they are not
this stage, but they're not, right? Like we're protesting this image that they're saying represents us.
I love that they call it the degrading, mindless, boob girly symbol.
Yes.
If that's not a Shulamith Firestone sounding phrase, I don't know what isn't. You know?
What I will say about that is kind of like what we said earlier in this episode, that Carol Hanisch did write, quote, you know, later on in her life, she did write that, quote, one of the biggest mistakes of the whole pageant was our anti-womanism. Miss America and all beautiful women came off as our enemy instead of our sisters who suffer with us.
Well, see, that's such an easy thing,
yes,
to miss.
Yes.
Because I think that even at the time, I'm sure they were thinking about fighting the establishment,
absolutely,
and not about the actual women. But I'm sure if they were to take the time and think about it, it's like, no, we're not mad at you for thinking that you have to behave this way.
We're mad at
we
you that
love
society
you.
Has made you think that,
exactly,
you have to think this way. Right.
But to me, the coolest thing, I shouldn't say the coolest, but one of the coolest thing about this protest is that, like, you know how people always refer to feminists as bra burners?
Yes, and we talked
this
about
is why.
This. We talked about this in our second wave feminism episode.
And we, yeah, talked about with Shulamith Firestone, uh-huh, too. Like, this is where the freedom trash can became a thing. Like, everyone was, yeah, invited to bring, like, mops and pantyhose and makeup and bras,
your
and girls
eyelashes,
and
your,
yeah,
wigs.
It,
yeah,
was any sort of instruments of female torture, in which they called it. So that was kind of what was going on outside, is that all this stuff is burning, and then inside,
well, it wasn't actually burning. That was the thing, is that it didn't, nothing ever actually burned. There was somebody,
oh, it was just the trash can.
It was just the trash can. They told them they weren't allowed to burn anything because it was on the boardwalk and the boardwalk was flammable.
Ah.
So they had originally planned on burning things, and there was a reporter from the New York Times who wrote her article beforehand,
yeah,
saying that they were burning things,
and that's where burning
that
the bras,
and
oh
then
my
everyone
god
kind of took off with that idea that, oh my gosh, these radical feminists are out there
burning
their
bras. Well, then Carol Hanisch and a few others, there were four protesters that made their way into the actual event. And before the Miss America winner was announced, they unveiled a large bed sheet that said Women's Liberation on it. And they began chanting Women's Liberation and things like it. And then they were removed by police quickly afterward. But they did make a really big statement. There were no cameras that recorded that incident, but there were like tons of reporters and newspapers there that wrote all about that incident. And it really did give this huge boost to the women's liberation movement.
Right. I mean, a lot of people credit, many historians now credit the 68 protest as the beginning of feminism's broader second wave.
Yeah.
As kind of like it going well, because beyond.
That was the whole thing. And they were looking for a way to make it be more mainstream and known.
And what I loved about this protest as well was that for all of the times that we very validly criticize the second wave for not being inclusive and for being largely a white feminist kind of movement.
Yeah.
They did go out of their way in their manifesto to say that a reason why they were protesting was because of the racism of the pageant, that there hadn't been a woman of color who had ever won, nor had there ever been up until this point a black contestant, nor had there ever been, and this is what they wrote, nor has there ever been a true Miss America, an American Indian. So they put all of these things like actually into their document.
Because I gotta say, I think the radical feminists of that era, more than the mainstream feminists like Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem, yeah, kind of had the right idea. Like, I think that's why they were less popular, because they were more willing to look into the intersections.
Absolutely.
Rather than the primary white feminist issues.
I mean, they were also anti-capitalist in that they also attacked the pageant from a consumeristic point of view by boycotting all of the sponsors, all the corporate sponsors,
right,
who kind of gave to the pageant. So it was very cool what they did there.
Very.
So let me see. I guess the only thing that I have left to say, I think I've hit most of my bullet points in my notes, but I kind of wanted to wrap it up with the fact that some people do find pageants to be empowering.
Right.
There are people who will always give that argument that pageants have come to represent a different form of feminism, especially in recent years. For better or for worse, they do provide a large-scale platform for women to express themselves and showcase their talents and receive recognition. And there are a lot of contestants, previous former pageant contestants, who will tell you that they had very positive experiences and say that the platform helped to improve their communication skills. And in recent years, pageants have also been a means for women to not only earn money via scholarships towards higher education, although I will say that Miss America is a little shady on what they say. They do give a lot of money to scholarships, but their numbers are a little fudged.
Yeah, yeah.
But in recent years, we've seen a lot of women use their platform within pageants to be vocal about women's rights and gender inequality. In November of 2017, the contenders of Miss Peru beauty pageant recited statistics and facts about the violence against women in their country instead of their bust, waist, and hip measurements. And I remember when this happened.
Yeah.
Still, you're in a pageant where you have to publicly tell your bust, waist, and hip measurements, but it was very cool and it was very effective.
It was a way to protest. Yeah.
It was a protest. These women stood in solidarity together. Again, a very scary thing to do when this is your dream. You've worked hard to get to the Miss Peru stage.
Yeah, that's ballsy. That is a surefire way to maybe not be scored as well.
Yeah, but they all did it together. So, yeah. I mean, like, you can't hurt all of them, right?
Yeah, what
are
you going to do?
Standing as a group together. And it was very, very cool. They all got up there. I remember this footage. And this was a big problem in their country, and they addressed it on this platform that they had been given.
Of course.
That is cool that they had that platform to do that, you know?
Yes.
So I want to close it with this last little chunk from that Medium article, because I think that she summarized it very well. Quote, "At the end of the day, beauty pageants both empower and degrade women. They both promote feminism and borrow from the patriarchy. The bottom line is, however, pageants are inspiring women to redefine what it means to be beautiful. Women are not beautiful only if they fit into the norms of having a pretty face and carry an exhausting zest for life. Women are beautiful when they accomplish what they set out to do, leaping across hurdles and breaking barriers. They are beautiful when they stand up for themselves and question inequality. They are beautiful when they show empathy and help support and build up other women and not bring them down. So I think that we're heading that way.
Right.
Well, in pageants, I hope it continues that way.
I agree. And there was a Psychology Today article that I read where it was talking about what to do if your child is interested in that world, if you're interested in that world. And the biggest thing they said was ensuring that you have passions and activities outside of just the pageant world. And I think that that is such an important message to all of us, because it's easy for us to have tunnel vision, especially when we have this need to succeed in our culture and society, where it's easy for us to focus on one thing and put all of our eggs in one basket and all of our worth into that one thing as well. And what I was reading is that it's important for us to have a variety of different passions and things that excite us in our lives, so that when we lose one of those things or don't do as well, or maybe don't fit into the same dress size or look like we did when we were at the top of our game, or in your mind of what you think is the top of our game, you have other things that have value and worth within you, so that you don't only rely on that one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as parents, you know, it must be difficult to ride that line between giving your child
what they want
and what you think they need, and really monitoring their well-being. I know my mom really struggled with that, you know, whenever I wanted to do any kind of performing art.
Right.
So I think another important thing is to just constantly be monitoring your child, making sure that they are happy with what they're doing, that what they're doing
and communicating with them. Like, that was one thing that my mom always made so clear to me, is that
you can stop anytime.
And like, I don't think a lot of people in my adult life realize how important skating was to me. Like, that was supposed to be my life,
right?
And there was so much pressure on me, but the fact that my mom always told me that you could tell me right now that you don't want to do it anymore and you're never coming back. We're going to go home. And that was like I'm almost going to get teary thinking about it. But like, to me, it was like my worth is not wrapped around what I do there today. And I think that there's that thing for each of us that we carry our worth in. Mm-hmm. And it's whether or not we do good or bad in our own perception of it that day that carries our worth, rather than having a widespread different array of things that carry our worth.
And also, you know, parents, and I'm sure that this is hard to do sometimes because your life does get wrapped up in your children a lot of the time, but also watch yourself, because I know that there was a lot of stuff I wanted to make my parents happy.
Yeah.
I wanted to make them proud. And if I sensed that, like, me doing this thing or their worth at all was wrapped up in my success in the pageant world or whatever it is, then I would push myself probably beyond healthy boundaries.
Right. And I think that's the thing, is that parents, just as much as children who are in pageants, have to do their own work and understand that their child is not an extension of them. What their child does is part of their own being. They are their own person, and they are allowed to do whatever they choose to do in their lives. And I know that's so hard to say. I mean,
yes,
my mom struggled with, you know, trying to coach me from the sidelines, and luckily I had a coach that stopped her. But, you know, that's something that's so easy because you care about your child and you want to see them succeed. And it's easy to tell yourself that you're just doing everything you can to help them achieve their goal. But I think being really cognizant of, like, how you're interacting with your child in those types of circumstances and letting them be a kid is so important.
Yep. Yep.
So totally, if you're going to do it, just like, you have to just be aware of the things you're teaching your child.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm so glad we talked about this. I can't believe that we've never touched this topic before.
Well, man, it seems like a very big and daunting. Like, I even texted you because I was like, there's so much written on this subject. So listeners, if you want more, I mean, a simple feminism and beauty pageant search on Google will pull up many, many articles.
Oh my gosh. And, you know, I love reading about all of the, like, the history of things and how things came to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not here to push you going on Wikipedia, but I thoroughly enjoyed reading the child pageant and regular pageant histories on Wikipedia. They were unbelievably fascinating. The amount of men who dip their toes into why things are the way they are. There's so much into this. So if you've enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to go off and do your own research. If there's anything else that you want to know more about, there are so many amazing activists that have come through the pageant world, moments of activism that have come through.
Yeah, we didn't even touch on a lot. I mean, there have been a lot of...
We didn't touch on Mike Tyson.
A lot of protests that happen within the pageant world. So just... throwing that out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a cornucopia of information for you out there. So thank you so much to the listener who suggested this episode. You all always have such amazing suggestions and save us when we don't know what to do. So if there's anything that you want us to talk about in the future, please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us on Angry Neighborhood Feminist on Instagram. Before I forget to mention it, we are ending our holiday merch on January 30th. So if you want to get your Slay the Patriarchy sweatshirt before next holiday season, get on our Threadless account by going to the link in our bio on our Instagram page, or get a Rage On mask or a YAMF sticker, or what else do we have?
We've got notebooks.
We got notebooks. There's onesies.
Yeah.
There's phone cases. Like, there's magnets. So much stuff. There's magnets. We have so many goodies. So if you want to find any of that, just go to our link in our bio on our Instagram. We also have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the fellow listeners on the group page. Last but most certainly not least, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't done so already, it is the best way to support us, and it truly does make our day. We love talking to each other about them. They're so sweet. All right, that's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.